Let's do it.
Thanks. Listen to that. Do you think that tuning a guitar by ear is a lost art? Nobody knows how to do it anymore. I can't do it.
We rely too much on our
tuners.
Our apps.
On our apps.
Now, I do like to use a tuner to make sure I'm in the 440
right.
ballpark.
Right.
Because you could tune this guitar to itself, but it could be like, you know, a percentage above 440, where if you want it to be in tune with everybody else in the world,
you gotta be in 440.
Then you use a tuner, yeah.
Yeah. Let me hear that then.
This first guitar I played this morning.
Oh my god. Sounds rusty.
Yeah, a little rusty.
It's a little rusty. Yeah, polish that off.
Whoo!
Unbelievable.
Right. Are we recording?
We're in. If you want the headphones, you can use them.
So you're going to edit all this stuff, right?
This is all in.
Nothing gets edited.
It's all this.
That's not
true. All that's in.
Are you serious?
Why would I take that out? That was beautiful.
Oh, please don't post that.
What? You noodling on the guitar?
We can't do that.
I'll take it out. Don't worry.
Yeah. When it comes time to
don't take that out.
When it comes time to play the guitar, let me know and I'll try to do something that doesn't suck.
That doesn't suck. Guthrie Trap.
Oh, can I? I'll take that.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Leave the coffee. It's fine. It's fine. Guthrie Trap on the podcast round two. Not many guests get a second shot.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I can't believe I made the cut to the second.
Well, I love you. That's why.
Well, we go way back, man. Our relationship precedes this podcast and your success and fame in the 615 area code.
I don't know about that, but it's true. Guthrie was the first. You were probably the first person. One of the first people I ever met who was worth anything in this town was you.
I was worth about $1.50.
That's why I said worth anything.
Right,
just
right.
Someone who was worth anything.
Worth anything.
Yeah.
Hey, so how did that happen? You moved here from New York City.
No, somebody connected us. Actually, a guitar teacher in Boston.
Oh, wow.
I had this teacher in Boston. This guy named Rick Peckham.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just emailed you and said, hey, I've got a student who's going to be in Nashville, coming down to Nashville. Would you meet with him? And I went over to your house and took a lesson.
I said
this on the last podcast, is that hour of guitar playing, not to gas you up, because I'm not really here to do that, to be honest.
Right.
But that 1 hour of guitar playing was with the most informative hour of guitar teaching I've ever had in my life, hands down.
Oh man, thanks.
It completely opened up the neck to me, and because what you did is you changed my whole mindset of the guitar in 1 hour, and the concepts that you gave me on that lesson,
mm-hmm.
I'm still working on, but they're what I think about every time I take a solo, if I'm building a part for a song, if I'm trying to learn something, those concepts come in handy.
Sure.
Like if I'm trying to learn something by ear.
Totally.
And basically what the switch was I was thinking so scalar, if that's even a word.
It is.
And you...
Well executed, by the way. That's a tough one.
That's a tough word to say. But you basically said, don't do that.
Right.
You need to be thinking about the chords and mm-hmm. the triads.
And the song.
And the song.
Which is a big Nashville thing. I mean, once you've, I've been here for 25 years, and you learn real quick that it's not about the guitar solo or the guitar fills or anything like that. It's about supporting the song and the lyric and the vocal. And so you immediately realize, if you're smart, pretty quickly that it's a supportive role as a musician in this town. And so that kind of changes your approach to music, and it makes the one chord jam we kind of all go, well, you know, it's time to move. It's time for some movement here to happen, you know. So, and there's a time and place for all that stuff. And, of course, my world is, you know, I'm in the guitar world. So I almost look at it like it's not really even the music business. It's the guitar business, you know. And so that's just kind of how I've developed. The career has developed into that here. But that is all, it's all affected by Nashville, because it changes the way you look at music, and it refines it down to those things like melody and just what a great song is, because you're pummeled with great songs for, you know, year after year after year, 10, you know, 20, 25, 30 years, you know. It's pretty wild how this town affects that part of it, you know.
Do you feel this way, though, that what I was referencing earlier, that most guitar players spend so much time on their scales, on their modes, and you gotta know that stuff.
Yeah, you do. Well, it's like a, it's like learning the pentatonic, which is a very, for those of you that are not guitar-centric on here, it's the pentatonic and the scales and stuff. That's like learning how to cook an omelet if you're a chef. And it's like learning how to dribble the basketball, right?
It's your fundamentals.
It's your fundamentals. And you're not going to ever, you're never going to depart from those. You're going to use those every day. I'm using those every day. But they're designed to learn those, and then you move on, you know. But you have to establish that fundamental. And it's not fun, and most of us get that out of the way when we're really young. You know, from 10 to like, 15 or 20, you've got, we're not busy. We're not working. We're sitting at home and learning how to play. And so most of the guys that I work with in the education world of music are, they're older, they're CEOs, they're already very successful in these other things, and they played some guitar in college, and they're coming back to get back into it. And what I usually tell them right out of the gate is like, hey man, look, I know you don't want to do this for a living. You've got a full-blown career, you've got families, you don't have time to do this now. So I'm trying to get them to focus on the big picture, which is just sit down and try to make some music on your instrument. So anybody that's really going to be good doesn't really need a teacher, kind of. You know, they're at home learning how to play on records, and they're sitting in with bands, and you're getting the experience. And so I think, looking back on all this stuff now, I'm an completely uneducated musician and human being. I mean, you know, I quit high school and 2 weeks into the 10th grade, never went back. But I kind of knew subconsciously that I was going to be a lifer musician, you know. And so I got really lucky and fortunate for things to be pretty damn good and having more fun than ever and all that. But I can't remember where I was going.
Do you have
with
some
that.
Sense of pride?
I can't remember where I was going with that. I had a great point.
You were talking about musicians, lifers who.
Well, yeah, and like the guys that are, it's about the experience and the hands-on stuff. So for me, my lack of music education in a formal sense has proven to be a good way to teach it, because it kind of, I'm not a music teacher, I'm a player first, and so we're able to kind of trim the fat and get right down to the shit that we know that works, that we use to navigate our way through a variety of different genres on a daily basis in a town like Nashville. And me and the guys that I really respect in this town, that's how they all look at it. It's playing to the song. And it's hitting the money notes in a chord, because without the chord, you know, you have nothing.
Yeah.
Until you commit to a sound, and then you're layering in things that embellish that foundation.
Do you remember some key things that came to you though that you really felt were key concepts that were unlocked? Like, I've heard you talk about the Danny Gann video had a big influence on your playing.
That was a
right?
big one. That was later on in my teenage years that I stole a lot of stuff from, and some concepts that I still teach and fall back on big
what,
time
What's
today.
In that video? I got to go watch it
well,
again.
There's some great stuff in there, but to be in sequence, I'll tell you the video that I watched, and these were VHS tapes back in South Alabama.
Can you still find these? Do you know?
You could probably find them on eBay or something. I don't know, but yeah, shit's getting hard to find. And I'm getting old too, which is why I have
an
opinion, you know. But, yeah. but I'll tell you the video that changed my life. And luckily now we've got YouTube, man. I mean, guys want to learn stuff, just go to YouTube. It's incredible. But
sometimes there's so much on YouTube that's hard to find the good stuff.
Well, you
got to really
know what
good.
You're looking for.
That's the thing. Sometimes it's overwhelming.
You still have to know what you're looking for, and so it's pretty crazy. But that's a whole other conversation. That's chapter 3, right?
Yeah.
But what changed my life on the guitar, I was stuck down in these frets trying to, you know, play
first five
play
frets.
Fiddle tunes and bluegrass songs, and I could play a few blues licks and stuff in the first four or five frets. But all this up here was completely, I was completely lost, like 90% of people are, you know? And so what Pat Flynn showed me, who was a Nashville session guy here a long time ago in a great band with Sam Bush and Bela Fleck called Newgrass Revival. And he wrote a bunch of great songs and was a great acoustic guitar player. Still is. He still lives here. And he said, look, if you want to open up the fretboard to be able to solo and play a lot of different ideas and, you know, expand your vocabulary on the instrument, you have to learn your chord inversions up the neck. And as soon as I did that, chord, arpeggio, pentatonic, and the scale to go around major, minor, dominant 7, major 7, then everything else opened up. And that really, that changed, that pivotal moment in that chunk of time, whether it was 5 or 6, 7, 10 years of, you know, of looking at that, that really sent me on my way to be able to combine that core fundamental approach and then combine with a really good ear, because my family had great taste in they're all still alive, has great taste in music, and exposed me to a lot of great music and a lot of people playing music in a room. You know, that's the one thing Nashville doesn't really do, except the bluegrass community. When you go to a party in Nashville and it revolves around bluegrass, there's going to be a jam session breakout at some point. And
what's the thing that no one does, though, is jam?
It's easier, though, because with bluegrass, with acoustic instruments, you don't have to plug into anything.
Right.
You could take a mandolin or a banjo or a guitar to a campfire and sing songs, right? You don't need a PA or a drum kit or an amp. So you go to these parties around Nashville that are the bluegrass cats, and, man, all those parties revolve around music. They're sitting in a big circle. The hot pickers are in the middle, inner circle, and the kids are on the outskirts learning how to strum along. And it's a very cool, organic way to learn how to play music, because it's hands-on. You're hearing it. You're learning how to play. And that's how I grew up. My parents would take me to these parties like that, and my dad would be carrying me on his shoulder to go to the car to go home at midnight. And that's how I grew up, you know. And so I learned how to play in those situations. So to me, it's all about experience. Well, there's a lot of knowledge in the world right now, but it's the experience. And you just can't rush that. It takes time. Yeah, That's why guys like Billy Gibbons and John Oates are 75 and, you know, 74, 75 years old. That's why they're so fucking cool, because they've got so much life experience, you know. So don't, if you're a youngster out there, you know, teenager or early 20s, don't diminish your elders, man. Embrace your elders. Find some cool elders and learn to fucking love them and hang out with them and learn something from them. That's my only word of wisdom.
For the whole day, you get one word of wisdom.
That's it.
What was the thing, though? Cause
and then we got to go high-low.
We're going to go high-low in a second. We're going to discuss what we're talking about.
This is the metaphysical part of this conversation.
Wait, we're going to get there, though. But here's what I'm trying to understand. So I feel like when you're approaching a solo, correct me if I'm wrong, the tools that you have are your pentatonics.
We're talking about a guitar solo.
A guitar solo. And I'm talking about you personally.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about besides pentatonics and your triads? And how to use your triads in creative ways, whether you're superimposing something.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about seventh chords and those arpeggios?
Yeah.
Or are you mostly thinking about your triads and how to use them?
Well, for me, and I think most, you know, professionals, like I said, we've played a lot at this point, you know, my whole life. And so since I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I've never done anything else. I've never had a job. I'm a lifer. I consider myself a lifer, a musician, you know. And so I've gotten those fundamentals out of the way. Now, I still will work on things, you know, and harmonizing the major scale and just things like that are great, you know, exercises to keep doing. But I've gotten a lot of those fundamentals out of the way when I was younger. And so now, what I'm focusing on is just the sheer musicality of what's going on in real time, and looking, you know, you're hearing chord changes come from a mile away. It's like driving a car. You don't want to look right down at the pavement when you're going 80 miles an hour, or you're going to run into everything. You got to be, the faster you're going, the farther out in front of you, you got to look. And so the ear is such an important part of this. And so I'm just hearing like the first, it's like this. If I was going to sit in with a band in Kansas City and I'm walking to a bar and somebody goes, "Hey man, let's get Guthrie up to play one." Happens all the time. Okay. All right, guys, let's have some fun. What are we going to play? Well, I don't have any information at that point. I don't know what these guys are going to do. It could be a reggae song. It could be a blues shuffle. It could be an original that a guy wants to do. So until I am getting some information, I don't know anything yet. And so I'll go like, "Okay, guys, hey man, let's keep it easy and fun. Let's do a blues progression or something, or play a, you know, standard, something, you know, some standard Swinging Doors or some country song or a blues song or some funk tune or something. And that way you know the changes that are coming. But if a guy, like, he goes, well, man, we're going to do this original. And I go, okay. Now, I don't know what's coming. Okay, you know, he throws some crazy chords. Well, then I'm not going to play anything until I hear the chord progression go around a couple of times. And if I don't know the song, I'm probably not going to play anything, because you can't make a mistake if you don't play anything.
That's true, right?
Right.
But then you look like a loser, don't you?
Well, and it's like, it's so much like the language. It's a language. So you're trying to communicate something by playing this instrument or any instrument. So I equate music to language, cooking, and exercise. Those three things are so parallel, because with exercise, you're not going to see any results until you get up off the couch and start moving. If you don't pick that, as much time as you put into this thing, that's what you're going to get out of it. And with the cooking, it's like, if I read a cookbook this thick, but I don't ever cook anything, and I know I've memorized that cookbook, but I've never gotten my hands dirty, then I still suck as a cook.
Yeah,
and
right.
I do suck as a cook, by the way. But then the other parallel.
I've had your salmon. You make a good salmon.
I can make some salmon.
Yeah,
I wouldn't starve if I had some salmon around, yeah, or some chicken. But I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be able to cook a bunch of stuff. But then the other part of it is just the language. I mean, and so, you know, big picture is you've got this alphabet. You know, you've got all these notes on this instrument. Well, you're trying to put together words and phrases and sentences and tell a story that makes sense. And so if I was trying to think about the notes on the guitar while I was playing, or the triads or anything like that, I'd be stumbling all over the place. It'd be like me talking to you and trying to think of every letter of every word while I was saying it. Well, I wouldn't be able to say anything, because, like, just, you know, if I said, S-A-I-D, you got to think, you know, who could do that? So that's how I equate that to playing the guitar. You got to be able to just get past that and start talking.
Right.
And the faster it's moving, the faster you got to be able to talk and keep up, right? And so you're trying to put these musical phrases and say something to somebody on this. If I picked up this guitar right now and played a little phrase, it would make sense to you. But if I just played a bunch of jumbled notes that didn't mean anything, it wouldn't say anything.
Right.
And so it's exactly like speaking a language and communicating.
Right.
You're communicating through music.
Before we move on.
Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. Before we move on, what were the concepts from the Danny Gann video that you really stole?
Just some hillbilly jazz approaches to playing music. And to answer your question, ultimately, with what you just said, is the first thing I hear is what's the information I'm getting? Is this like a, you know, what's the tempo? What's the groove? What's the feel? What are the chords? Is it a minor feel? Is it a dark sound? Is it something that's happy? Or is there vocals? You know, what are we doing here? Okay, well, then we're going to be able to jump right in. As soon as we get the information we need, then we're off to the races. So the more information you have, the more confident I'm going to be as to be able to play something that matters, right? And so with the trio, you know, I'm at that point, man, I'm just hanging on with my bandmates. The drummer and the bass player are amazing. So I'm hanging on with those guys and hoping that they kick my ass into the next gear, you know? And so at that point, I'm just trying to play something that is ultimate soul and feel that's inside of me to get out through that fingerboard and through that speaker into the atmosphere, you know? And so it's not about, I don't really care about any commercial success with the music industry or any of that shit that goes along with it. You know, I want to play music that makes me feel really, really good. And if you want to come along for the ride, then come on, but I'm not going to chase any bullshit, you know?
Yeah, right.
And why would you? Why would anybody?
But this is a great point. Guthrie's not here for his health. He's about to announce a new album.
Right.
That he's
right.
got coming out.
A lot of stuff going on.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
If you want, so here's what's exciting. So I'll tell you what's exciting. So as everybody knows, the Key West Songwriters Festival is coming up. I'm going to go
down
there.
This is the BMI Key West Songwriters Festival.
Yeah, we've got that coming up. We're locking that in, all the travel and stuff today. And so I'm going to play some with Robert Randolph, Dylan Altman, and then my old buddy Chuck Cannon. So I'm going to go down there and kind of be a little, you know, artist in residency type thing or whatever. And I've been doing that festival and going to Key West since I was a kid. So it's just a fun thing to do, as a lot of you guys that are listening to this podcast already know. And then this coming week, me and my girlfriend are going to Miami. We're going to go get to have a little vacation. And I try to get out of town as much as I can, chase the good weather. And so when we get back from that, we're doing two almost sold-out nights. We've still got some tickets left, but they're
selling. You need to save some tickets for me on the second night.
Yeah, so it's March 19th
I'll
and 20th.
I'll buy them. Just save them for me.
Yeah, I can get you on. And so Bitter End, the legendary Bitter End in New York City, we're going up there with the trio, and we're going to do two nights, March 19th and 20th, and it's selling really great. The owner of that club is awesome. I was up there with Oz Noy, and we sold that out as a guest with Oz, and then the owner was like, hey, man, we'd love to have you back, and so we developed a nice relationship with him. It's a perfect size room to go up there and play. And
different audiences up there versus when you play at the Underdog?
It's great. They
everyone
love
just
it.
Loves it.
Yeah, Nashville's a tough crowd, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're starved for that for your style of guitar playing up in New York.
And nobody dances in Nashville either.
Nobody dances. They dance in New York?
Well,
what are you talking about?
They will, but
everybody in New York, all the guitar players I hang out with, they all want a chicken pick.
Yeah, they love Nashville.
They
I mean,
do.
Who doesn't love Nashville? People ask me this all the time. What's the greatest music city on the planet? It's Nashville, Tennessee, because if there was a better one, we'd all be living there.
We're not here for the scenery.
Hey, I didn't move to Nashville for the Titans or hot chicken.
Or for the scenery. There's nothing to look at.
There's nothing
to look at. It's all flat.
It is.
There's nothing good here except for the industry and the community.
It's
the only thing.
It's pretty amazing. You know, so just to give you the details and some shameless self-promotion, which is not my style, and I'd easily forget to do it.
You're the biggest self-promotion. What are you talking about? Get out of here. This is why you're great, though.
Well, so... Okay, the New York thing is very exciting. To get out and do some stuff under, you know, my own name with the trio is very exciting. Then we'll do, I got a clinic that I'm going to do in Ohio, doing some clinics. So here's what I've been saying lately. There's a big difference between being burned out and exhausted. We all stay exhausted because we work our asses off every day. We're the only people crazy enough to get up every day and do this shit. And keep working and keep working and keep working. But if you're burned out, then you don't want to touch that thing. If you're exhausted because you're doing six or seven different things, and in one day you're putting energy into these different things, and that is exhausting, but you're not burned out.
Yeah,
you're not just on the road playing a country gig, and you're playing the same songs every night. Man, I've been there. Fucking burnout, quick. If you're just teaching, if you're just doing sessions, if you're just doing this, I know these guys, everybody's burned out if they're just doing one thing too much. So for me, I knew there was something else out there, and I came off the road years ago, and I started wanting to be known more as an artist because I knew I had something more to say on this instrument. And so that's when all this stuff started changing for me, and now I'm happy. I'm in a great spot. I'm still grumpy, but I'm happy grumpy, right?
Yeah,
is that
that's the thing. You can be happy grumpy,
and it's frustrating to try to keep moving this stuff forward. But then that's why we're all here. All working to do this. So if you have 20 really inspiring, motivated days, and you have three or four of them that you want to bang your head against the wall, that's healthy.
Good.
That's healthy.
Then wait, but what's happening with this new record?
Okay, then the new record. So let me back up real quick. So the next thing that's coming out is this musician's tribute to Chet Atkins.
What?
Yeah, and
who's doing this?
We recorded that. Carl Jackson produced it, and a couple other guys who I'm not going to mention who they are because I'm not sure they won't be talking about it a whole lot. But on 4/19, 2024, the Chet record is going to release, and it's Vince Gill's on there, Eric Clapton's on there, Tommy Emmanuel, Jerry Douglas, Alison Krauss, James Taylor. Brent Mason, some Nashville cats, but I've known Carl for a long time, and he asked me to be on it, and so I'm a featured artist on this musician's tribute to Chet Atkins, and I'm so proud to be on there with these guys.
What songs did you do?
I did Caravan.
Oh my God!
The old Chet Atkins, Les Paul.
Isn't it
song.
Crazy that we still look at people like Chet, and we just go, Who's done better since?
He was Mr. Nashville. I mean, he produced all those records, and yeah. I mean, he was Chet Atkins. So
even Tommy Emmanuel, who's like the best guitar player in the world,
amazing.
He's got a totally different feel.
He's a great guy too, by the way.
Amazing guy. But when he plays that music, it's got a totally different feel than when Chet does it. And probably no one does it better than Tommy.
Amazing, yeah.
But
yeah,
there's some Chet cats had out this there. Bounce, like this light, this lightness in the way
thumb.
He played. It was so
that.
Bouncy and so light.
So cool.
And I don't know. I've never heard anyone do it. Everyone always sounds like themselves when they do it. Nobody sounds like Chet.
Right. It's a hard thing to do, that alternating thumb bass, you know, alternating bass. And that style of guitar, you know, those guys can sit down and they're playing the bass note with their thumb. They're playing the chords. You're getting the melody. It's like a one-man band. You know, my solo act sucks. You know, I can't do anything by myself.
Those guys,
but
they play.
They can sit down and do this whole... You know, they can play Mr. Sandman or something like that, and it's just beautiful,
or windy and warm,
full
or,
thing, right? You're getting all the stuff that you need. So, so that's coming out, and then yesterday we just released the official. We just announced the official release date for the Tom Bukovac Guthrie Trapp record, and it's called In Stereo. And I know you're gonna fold in some. You're going to layer in some artwork.
When you
at the
just
end
said
of it.
In stereo, we're going to put the picture of the album cover just right over your face.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, in stereo. What could be better than covering my face up?
Exactly.
I have a face for radio.
Right. That's what we're doing. We're doing radio. That's what this is.
So that record's coming out, and I'm unbelievably proud to be a part of this record with my good buddy.
How do you get roped? You guys could play with anyone. Tom plays with everyone. Would he do a record? Why do you guys come together to do this?
Well, he's the session man, you know. And
which is not what you are.
I'm not, but...
You take pride in that, I feel like.
I do. Yeah, I do. And there's a whole long... You know, that's a whole long story. Everybody in Nashville is going to chase the brass ring, which is, you know, getting a hit song or having success as a band. Or if you're an instrumentalist, it's like being CMA Musician of the Year and all that stuff. And I didn't feel comfortable playing a lot of commercial music. I'm not good at it because I don't like a lot of it, you know? And I'm not diminishing anybody making a living in the music business. If you can make a living in the music industry, dude, I got all the support for you in the world. I'm not hating on anything, but me personally, I didn't grow up listening to that kind of music. I didn't learn how to play guitar by listening to the Beatles and Led Zeppelin like most people. I was listening to songwriters and bluegrass and acoustic music, and then got into playing electric guitar. And I'm not saying my story is any more unique than anybody else's. Look, we live in Nashville. Everybody here's got an amazing, unique story. You know, that's what makes this place so fucking cool, is we're all here together. We've all got our own things that we're doing, and we just all need to be respectful of each other and those diverse backgrounds and opinions and what everybody loves, man. Like, I'm not, not everybody's going to love instrumental guitar music. I mean, dude, I'm in a niche thing that, you know, it has its own set of frustrations.
Yeah.
But we all just need to find what we love to do and chase that like there's no fucking tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know?
I think...
Because that's what
we
have. If you move to Nashville and you try to change what you love to fit in here, you're just going to end up being miserable. Because there's already somebody there doing that better than you're going to be able to. So don't move to Nashville and try to be chase the most successful person at that moment. First of all, that's going to change. So you're going to change. Like, I've heard this so many times. I just moved here from L.A. and I was a pop artist in L.A., but now I'm a country artist. And I'm thinking, like, because you know me, man, my personality, I'll push up on you a little bit at this point. And I'm like, you're telling me that the town you live in dictates what
kind of artist you are?
What kind of artist you are, who you are as an artist? And, oh, I moved to New York, and I'm going to try that for 2 years. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to go to Austin, and I'm going to be a rockabilly singer. Or what? You know, it's like, what? Like, no, just why don't you go out into a field somewhere and spend a couple nights in a tent and, like, think about who the fuck you really want to be as an artist, you know? Then figure the rest out.
Yeah.
But don't let that's just you trying to figure out who you are as a human being.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the music industry or any city. And so that's a whole other soapbox. But
I think this record coming out, this Bukovac record, I think you're the perfect guy
that's what he would want to make this record with. Well, and that's my point of all that rambling, nonsensical rambling, I think that we have two very different styles, and so when and but we're both coming at it from a very kind of, for lack of a better term, kind of a natural, organic place where it's like it's not about anything but trying to make some music and create some soul and some feel, some feeling, you know, like let's feel something. That's what this, anybody that's leaving whatever writing session or meeting or whatever they're doing, and you get in your car, which I think is the greatest barometer, listening to music in your car is like, that separates the men from the boys. Like,
yeah.
Or, well, you know what I mean? It's like, if you're pretending to do something here, when you get in your car by yourself, you're putting on whatever moves you the most.
Yeah, right, right.
So I get in my car, I put on Cuban salsa music, or like, I like Dua Lipa. You know, I like to listen to things that are completely different than anybody's.
You like Dua Lipa?
I don't want to hear a bunch of guitar players.
Yeah, right, right.
I listen to some like chill, lo-fi, Miami poolside
and Dua
music.
Lipa. I love Dua Lipa.
I love Dua Lipa.
The record's great. Yeah, yeah.
Guilty pleasure, man. I'm a huge fan of like of that kind of music because it's different than anything that I do or anything that I grew up listening to, and it just kind of puts me in like I don't have to really think about it a whole lot. It's just kind of like it's kind of high energy, you know, like that kind of trance kind of groove, you know.
Yeah.
It's just those that stuff, and it's modern and it's cool. It makes me feel young, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
makes
yeah.
me feel like I'm still at the club.
Wait, hold on, because I want to be sure we talk about the record before we run out of time.
Right, right.
Do you have the kind of relationship between you and Bukovac where if one of you plays something, like if he plays something, you go, that could be better, or I know you have something else in you.
No,
will you say that to each other?
No, I won't say that to him. Now he'll because here's the thing: he's 10 years older than I am, and
is he?
And dude, I defer to his experience because, dude, there's nobody like that guy. I mean, his amount of experience and depth and what he's hearing and the way he's approaching music, there's nobody on the planet that can come close to that guy. I mean, for his thing that he does and it's just, it doesn't matter what style of music it is. It doesn't matter who he's recording with or who he's playing with. It's 150% every single time. There's no messing around. There's no phoning it in. It's, dude, it's game on. Keys, bass, guitar, it doesn't matter. His arranging skills. And so I have a lot of respect for the guy. And most people that we are going to spend our time with, because we know how valuable everybody's time is, if you're going to spend time playing music with somebody or doing a project, they're going to be your friends. You're going to respect them. I respect my elders, you know. I'm not gonna bust somebody's balls or try to joke. There's a very like unspoken respect factor that I have for a lot of these older guys that I hang around with, right? And so I defer to him, man, in the studio for sure. And he helped arrange this stuff like just unbelievably.
Did you write the songs together?
We showed up with some ideas, and there was a couple days we showed up. Fully booked studio, all the players and everything, and Tom goes, man, you got any ideas? And I went, man, not really. I said, you? He goes, no, not really. And we sat down and we grabbed the guitar and we just started. Okay, well, I got this little thing, and then hey, how about this? And then it ends up like at the end of the day, we got three songs. You know,
do you have to have the studio session booked? Like, is that the only way to get the pressure on?
It kind of is.
We got to do something, otherwise you'll never do it.
Yeah, everybody works better if they have a deadline. Yeah, and so we went in and did it, but. The thing about that is we made this record because for all the right reasons, really. I mean, there was no record label pressure. There's no corporate deadline. You know, it's just us going in and having complete creative control, but not making a self-indulgent shredding guitar record. I mean, when people hear this record, I want them to put it on and listen to the whole thing because these songs take on take you on these voyages, and it's really a musical record. It's not really a guitar record. There's a lot of great guitar playing on there, and there's some ferocious solos and all the things that you want to hear, but the overall theme of it is it's just really good music, and I can say that because I'm only 50% of the project.
Yeah.
If I was talking,
50% of it's really good.
At least 50% of it is really, really good. Exactly. And so I'm proud of it. We made it for the right reasons. All of our buddies are on, all of our really good friends
Steve
are
Mackey's
on there.
On Steve Mackey's some bass, on there. Right?
Yes, Mackey's on it. Brandon Bell recorded and engineered and mixed the whole thing.
Monkey Bars Revisited. I'm excited for that. Because that Monkey Bars is one of my favorite.
Pick Piece. Yeah, we didn't.
Oh, is it Pick Piece?
Excuse
me. Pick Piece Revisited. One. Yeah. That's one of my favorite songs off the first record, which was called Pick Piece.
Right.
I love that song.
Me too.
So are you kind of going back in and you're kind of doing?
Yeah, we just. I thought, you know what? I always wanted to cut that song again and kind of
and revisit it.
Put a little edge on the tempo, raise the tempo just a little bit, and so we cut that. And that might have been one of those days where we didn't have any ideas and was like, "Hey, let's cut this.
Let's cut this."
Yeah, Paul Franklin's on there, Dan Dugmore's on there, Tim Lauer, Jordan Pearlson. God, there's a bunch of other guys, of course, that I can't. I hate to not mention them, but you'll see the record. But
I think you guys, what a combo! Because I feel like what he does in every day is probably very restricted to what he's got to play. He's got to hold back constantly. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's why these guys get burned out in the studios, because you know the producer and the artist wants to know that they're hiring a thoroughbred that has all this horsepower. But then they just keep governing you down, you know?
Right.
Like, okay, well, yeah, because you do have to, it's about the song. And so.
And you might need anything in your arsenal at any time, but not at once. You only need one little piece, but you want to be sure that the guy has got it all. That if you call him to do something,
he
can do it.
You want to know the guy's got the headroom to be able to do anything you want. But they're only using, like, these guys are hiring thoroughbreds when they really only need a Shetland pony, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not really true, because what these guys do in the studio, when you watch them work, it's amazing.
And by the way,
and it's fascinating.
Don't you think it's a feel thing?
And they're really good.
Don't you think it's a feel thing? Like you'll hear them play the parts on the record, and then you'll hear the band go out, different players.
Yeah.
And they'll play the same parts, but it doesn't feel as good.
It's just not going to feel. Yeah. Well,
what is that feeling thing that you get?
It's the difference between being an artist and not. You know, I mean, somebody like Tom's is just, these guys are, they're artists. You know, like they're. Here's the thing. You can listen to a record and go, oh, yeah, that's an easy part. You know, that part's easy. Well, yeah, it's all easy. But to come up with it is very difficult. So anybody can learn a hook line. Those kids that are going out and playing in the bands, they can learn all those lines. But to come up with that from nothing on a chord progression that's very common and to make it different and unique is extremely hard, and to do it like instantly with the right sound is extremely difficult. That's
how did these
very
guys get
hard.
Good
there's
at
an
it.
Art to that.
How do they get good at it? They just do
they're
it so
just,
much, or do you think they're gifted?
Only, that's only, why there's only 10 guys doing it, you know,
if for each instrument.
Yeah, they're gifted. Yeah, these guys are very gifted. It's they're natural musicians, and they've played a lot, and they've worked on it. They work hard at it. I never worked hard at being a session guy. I play with the same guitar, and you know, I could plug into all these different amps and guitars, and I sound the same on everything.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of, and now I'm proud of that, because, you know, my friends that are all the session guys here, they're like, well, yeah, you're the late, great Michael Rhodes, who I had a trio with too for a long time. He goes, man, you're not a chameleon like these guys. He goes, you're more of an artist. He goes, you do your thing, and that's it. And it took me a while to get over that and really understand what he meant. And then I was like, now I'm really proud of that. And I'm just going for that, you know.
Yeah.
I want to do my own music because that's my happy place, you know. And so at the end of the day, we want to be successful. The only thing money means to me is freedom. And I like to travel. So, you know, as soon as I see a hole in the calendar, I'm booking a trip somewhere. I want to go.
Yeah, you travel a lot.
I like to travel a lot.
Yeah.
I like to go overseas and chase the good weather around. But to me, at the end of the day, as I see that I just turned 45 years old, February 3rd. And so, you know, I'm not old, but I'm not 22 either. And so I've got a little experience at this point to shed some light on a few things, maybe. Right. But time flies and, money's going to come and go. We could all lose everything tomorrow. Our health could come and go. And so at the end of the day, success for me is having the respect of the guys that I respect the most. That's what
don't you
means.
Feel like you have that? Who you?
Yes. No,
you play,
I do.
I've seen you play. Yeah. Joe Bonamassa will sit in with you.
No, I feel like that.
Robin Ford.
Totally.
Billy Gibbons.
Yeah, yeah.
You go out with John Oates.
Totally. That's what I'm saying. I mean, my life in Nashville has been a fantasy, man. I mean, I've gotten to not only know and play music with or not only know, but to be able to work with and call my friends, a lot of my heroes. And then a lot of guys that are completely come in out of the blue, like Oates and Gibbons. You know, Gibbons I've known now a little over 2 years and I talk to almost every day. And then Oates I've known for like over 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, well, about 20 years. I met him in Telluride, Colorado. But, you know, those guys, I mean, I never thought I'd be hanging out with Billy Gibbons. And then all of a sudden that came in from nowhere. But that's what I'm saying. Like, just to be asked to continue on with recording more songs, to do this record with Tom after we did one song the night before Thanksgiving on a live stream at a drummer friend of his house. This is this amazing home studio down in Franklin. And we went down there and we cut this song. I had a little idea and we turned it into this thing. And we said, man, that really came out good. We should do a whole record together. And then I was like,
that's how the record came together.
Yeah. So the fact that he expressed interest in doing a whole project with me, I mean, I couldn't help but to feel like, I'm like, dude, this is the coolest thing ever. Of all the people in the world that he could do a record with, why is it me?
Do you feel like you needed that
push? It's amazing. Of course, I'm the most fortunate, grateful, lucky person ever here.
Do you feel like you needed that push to do another record? Like, were you thinking about doing a third record? Or this was kind of a cool idea that got you into doing that next record?
All of those. Yeah, it was a great combination of all those things. Because I'm a huge fan of the collaboration. Collaborating is so much fun. A, it takes a lot of pressure off. You know, so if me and you... If I was sitting here trying to write a song by myself, I'd be questioning everything. And is it good enough? Is it any good at all? I mean, am I nuts for doing
this? You couldn't do this podcast alone.
No. And so that's the thing. So if you grabbed a guitar and I grabbed a guitar, then we would be, it's just, you know, you're supporting each other. You're reassuring that the idea is good. It's like, okay.
Or it's bad.
Or it's bad. And hey, we're wasting time. Let's move on. This is not going anywhere. Let's try this. Just all those things and the fun of it, the creative part of it, the camaraderie, the like, hey, well, that was great. Let's go, you know, get a beer somewhere or something. I mean, the whole thing that goes along with it is,
yeah,
it's a lifestyle, man. Really, I mean,
I've heard you say, which I relate with, and you got your guitar here too. We gotta get you to play in a second.
I might play a little something, yeah.
But you know what I relate to is, I heard you say in an interview, this was right when the world was opening back up post COVID, and you were like, I played a gig and I got home. But it didn't feel that fulfilling because the best part of the gig is the hang and you get food after and you hang with your friends and you go out afterwards. And I was thinking about that too. The gig, like I'll go on the road, I'll tour or travel. The gig is like 45 minutes if we're opening up for someone or if we're doing something.
Yeah, and you're hanging for 22
other hours. The part that's fun is afterwards you go get food, you hang with the band.
Right, right.
You're hanging in the green room getting sound check. Some crazy thing happens on the street that's like a story.
Right.
That's what the fun part is, right?
Totally,
It's the part that happens with the other people, the collaboration. Yeah, it's not even the gig sometimes.
Right, right. You're not just punching a clock and going home. It's like...
When you're out on the road like that. You're stuck there.
Yeah. And that's a huge part of it. And it does become, like these days, I think about this more, it's less about nerding out on the guitar. Like, I'm the worst gear person in the world. I don't want to talk about pedals. I don't want to talk about amps. I don't want to talk about guitars. Because I know that it doesn't matter. None of that shit matters.
You've given me this mentality.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And it's a distraction from how hard playing that fucking thing really is. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But, and of course, you know, as you get better, your gear gets better. And, you know, if you're a race car driver, the better you get, the better your car's going to get. It's the same kind of shit. But what I think about is the lifestyle. It's all about the lifestyle. And so, people play like their personalities. If you're overthinking this stuff and you're scared to death and you're worried about making a mistake, then you got to rewire your brain to just, at some point, like I said, life's short, time's valuable. You're going to have to jump in and get your feet wet and get dirty, you know. And then if you come out on the other side, great. If not, you might end up somewhere else, you know. I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lot of fun and I'm not stopping anytime soon. I mean, I just feel like I'm just getting started. So, you know, the other thing about living in a town like this is it can be, I swear to God, somebody needs to do a documentary on the positive and negative effects of a lot of creative people living in such a condensed area like this. Because the only other two places you can go are New York and L.A., and there's 20 million people hanging out in those areas. And so you go to the coffee shop, unless you live in like one of these neighborhoods maybe, but you know, you're not going to run into as many people as we run into on a daily basis in Nashville. I mean, dude, in one day here, you know, if you're having coffee and you're going and you're having lunch and you guys are, dude, you're running into like, you know, 15 people that, you know, three of them might be your heroes. You know, there's some up and comers you're meeting that are fans of your playing or whatever. It's just,
yeah,
it's crazy, man. I mean, this is the place, but it has its positive and negative effects. And so what we have to do is just, you know, we got to put one foot in front of the other and keep moving forward and try to shut off some of the noise. You know, you can't, like I said the other day, if you really want to make progress, it's keep doing your thing. Use this as the tool that we know it is and stop looking at everybody else's shit. Don't even look at anybody else. I don't want to even look at any of other guitar players' stuff. You know, I want to look at like where my next trip's going to be. But I don't want to see any other guitar player stuff because all it does to me is it's a distraction. It's a comparison. It's like, oh, well, why am I not doing that? He's doing that or whatever. And then there's a bunch of people going, well, they probably hate me because they see me doing something. They go, well, I'm better than that guy. Why am I not doing this? Well, we're all just in our own spot. So that's all you have. That's your spot. Fucking just own that and be happy with it. And so we're all doing it. Everybody's doing great. Just keep moving forward and don't let this shit drag you down. We talked about that last time I was on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, and it, dude, I'm right in the middle of it. I mean, I'm on social media as much or more than anybody because it's a tool that helps us make a living as musicians these days. And so I'm not diminishing the power of the positive side of the internet and social media. Is that, man, it connects a lot of people. You know, guys like me and you and our friends here, we're the only light that people around the world get to see into this bubble of Nashville. We're the, not the only light, but we're the only, you know, kind of like source or outlet that opens that world up to these guys. Because think about it, if you come to Nashville and you're a music fanatic and you come over here from Australia for the first time and you land in Nashville and you go to this place called Music Row, you're going to drive up and down that street and go, what is this? That's a bunch of houses. Well, because you can't just go to Blackbird or Sound Emporium and knock on the door and go in and see what's going on. But if you were to open those doors and walk in on any given day to that studio and, oh my God, it's Chris Stapleton or it's Alison Krauss and Robert Plant cutting their new record or it's T-Bone Burnett doing something for a movie or it's Morgan Wallen or whoever, it could be anything, but you go, holy shit, like that's going on right there while across the street these guys are like mowing the grass and these guys are eating barbecue, and but right there in that building is this amazing shit going down that would just blow anybody's mind on the planet. But you can't go in there because it's a closed door situation. So until guys like us start bringing that, you know, those behind the scenes kind of things, you know, it's really a cool thing. That's the good part of the internet to me, is shedding some light on a town that is a lot of closed door situations. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
100%.
Yeah.
Wait, we got to get you to play a little bit before we
run out
of time.
We also got to do the up down.
We got to do the up down. Well, so here's the thing. So we were walking in together, and Guthrie Trapp says to me, he goes, were you wearing sweatpants? And I go, yeah. And I look at him wear those sweatpants, and yeah, we're both wearing sweatpants. But you wouldn't know it looking at us because we got high low.
Right,
so
right,
Guthrie's
right.
Got a cool jacket. He's got the hat. He looks good up here. Down here, he's wearing sweatpants, which is exactly
face
what
for,
I'm wearing.
I got a face for radio.
I got and sweatpants, too. But it, what is this? You've been wearing sweatpants. Every time I see you now, you're wearing
Zach,
sweatpants.
Zach, I'm not even wearing pants.
When I met you, hold on, for the kids, please. This
okay.
is a family show.
Okay, all right.
When I first met you, I feel like you would have never been caught dead in sweatpants. You used to wear jeans all the time. I never saw you once in sweatpants.
Right, yeah.
Now you're 45, you wear the sweatpants. Is that what's happening?
That's what's happening. So
I'm wearing them in my 20s, the sweatpants.
You've figured it out early.
Yeah,
so,
I guess.
And here's what I say about sweatpants. It can only go two ways. Either you've completely given up on life, or you're doing pretty good.
Well, it's one or the other. Either don't give any fucks. So the sweatpants, you say, I'm comfy, I'm just rocking.
Exactly, there's no in between.
Or you've completely lost it.
Exactly.
It's my new favorite look, though, especially if you throw in some like nice shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that you're intentionally wearing the sweatpants.
Right.
But there's nothing intentional about it. They just feel so comfortable.
Well, and you know, comfort is so important. But
if you're going to rock and play guitar,
yeah,
skinny jeans, you can't. That's what every guitar player wears, but they're not very comfortable.
They're not very comfortable. Yeah. And so I found the Vioris, which is a nice brand. If you're not hip to the Vioris, that's a great. They've got a brick and mortar store on 12 South where you can find them at Nordstrom.
We've got a fucking like wind blower blowing outside. What are they doing?
Yeah.
Keep talking. We'll go yell at them after.
But yeah, so the sweatpants are big. Like during the week, I wear those. I wear them out to dinner because nobody. Guess what?
Nobody cares. Nobody's even looking at you. That's the thing that's hard to understand.
Nobody's looking at us.
No one even cares
so
about us.
So might as well be comfortable.
You might as well be comfortable.
But yeah. What I learned from Zach today in the parking lot was when he said, "Yeah, it's all about the up down."
Yeah.
And you were like, you know. Business on top, party down.
I might have said that. That might have been it. It is, though. I love the sweatpants. Yeah.
No, but you're right. I mean, you know, I go to the coffee shop in the morning over there in beautiful, sunny East Nashville where I live. And you know, a lot of young people are showing up in, I mean, full-blown pajamas.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, fuzzy slippers.
Do you think there's something?
Fuzzy slippers and dirty pajamas. And I'm like, you know what? Suddenly these sweatpants... don't look that bad.
Don't you think it's funny though? Like I love if I'm on a gig, I love sound checking in like shorts or like sweat.
Best.
And then you go and you change, and this is gonna sound crazy, but then you feel like you become the character of whatever guitar player you're gonna be that night.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Well, why would you wear those tight clothes during sound check when you can be so comfortable?
But there's something fun about sound checking and being a completely different person. And then it's almost like you're putting on an outfit or like
right,
a costume or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on, you're in a completely different mindset.
Yeah, totally.
And then the second I get off stage, I take it all off and I'm back in sweatpants.
Show business, man.
This is show business.
So,
did I tell you about the...
shorts, though. We got to talk about the shorts.
The shorts, too.
Well, if you're a male... And,
you should never wear shorts.
I don't think you should ever wear shorts unless you're going swimming.
Unless you're going swimming or you're on a boat in the hot summer, you should never wear shorts.
That's the only... reason to ever wear
even
shorts.
even that's pushing it.
The last thing I want to see anytime is another dude's legs.
No, gross.
Yeah, I got a couple rules about that. You want to hear them real quick?
Yeah, but and then we gotta play a little guitar.
Nobody cares, and they're laughing.
Nobody cares.
At me right
well,
now.
Let's hear them. We'll cut this out.
Here's the thing, especially for gigs.
Yeah.
Let's just say this for gigs.
Oh, you can't wear shorts
for playing
on a
guitar.
Gig.
No kneecaps, no open toes, and no armpits, dude. Hey guys, stop wearing the tank tops, man. Nobody wants to see this under your sweaty underarm anywhere.
Yeah.
So let's just like, I know I'll get some hate mail for that, but no open toes, no kneecaps, and no armpits on a gig.
Yeah.
On a gig.
No, never.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Okay. I saw you.
Now that everybody hates me for saying that, then.
No, I think they should respect you. Okay, hold on. We got to play a little bit. I saw this video of you playing Little Wing. You used to play Little Wing all the time.
Yeah, it's a great chord progression.
How do you think about those changes? Because that to me is... But you didn't really grow up listening to a lot of Hendrix, right?
Not a lot, but Little Wing's a staple. Do these fold down? These?
Oh, boy. This is the Guitar Heroes Holocaust, is these seat chair... the handrest on a chair.
It's
a guitar killer.
Down a little bit, though. Can you hear that at all?
Maybe point the mic that way. Just angle the mic a little bit down. I think we'll be fine. Oh, thanks, Clark. Oh, yeah, that's great. Should we maybe split the difference so we can capture some of his voice, too? I don't know. It's perfect. We got Clark here, who's been producing our show since day one, and he kills it.
Thank God. He's here.
I couldn't do any of this without him. Honestly, though, he's done... We've done so much. We've been in the trenches. We've done a lot together, Clark and I. It's a great guitar. Sounds killer. Collins. Thank you.
Oh shit! Let me do that one more time. Don't.
It's all live. What are you talking about? This is a gig. What are you talking about? Was that song? Is that on the record?
That's on the record. Yeah.
I love that. That's a great riff.
I don't know what that other part was. I stole that from something else. But so these days it's less about like single note soloing.
Yeah.
Which I love to do, of course. Every guitar player loves this solo, but it's more about these kind of motifs where it's, you know, you're kind of getting on a theme and it's not really genre specific. It just sounds like it's just chordal and
kind of Andy Summers-esque, like
kind of stuff. Yeah, I like that kind of shit. Like this kind of, you know, these little, like that was part of one of these songs.
I love that.
But that, you know, stuff like that where it's kind of, you know, you've got these kind of rolling. You know, just things like that. That's what
give us,
like.
Give us some.
I mean, that's a horrible, horrific example of that.
Give us a little, and we're running out of time, but you got the guitar out. Show us a little bit like kind of your take on getting the changes, because I feel like it's pretty unique actually to most people.
Yeah,
like on a song like Lil Wing or something, or it could be anything.
Yeah, I'm trying to play something melodic. Like I love guys like Mark Knopfler and Ry Cooter and things like that. You know, this really melodic players. I try to just kind of follow the sound of the chord because that's what's going on underneath. Like the chord is the foundation. That's the song. And so I'm trying to follow the chords that change. And so unless something's all in the major scale, like if you're playing, you know, G, E minor, C, D, well, the major scale is going to work for all that. But when you start getting more different chords, I was going to go to G.
That's secondary dominant.
Let's see, G to B7, the secondary dominant heading. But see, I'm hearing that heading towards, you know, the E minor, the sixth minor. So you're hearing the change coming. That's like driving down the highway really fast. You're looking way ahead. I'm already hearing, and most musicians, I'm not saying I'm like a genius. It's not that. It's just that you've played a lot of music. So you're hearing that chord change coming. So that's going to determine what I'm going to say to get to that point. So if I'm playing this, G, and then the next chord is then E minor, G7. Outline the G7 to C to D. D7, because the 5 is always a dominant 7. Right back to G.
Right?
You know, it's really simple, but you're targeting these notes. Like if I go that's just G. There's C. If I'm targeting this,
love that. Thank you.
Don't print that. But
you always make me want to play. You always, like, when you play it, the things you just make it seem so not. You make it seem so simple. Not that you make it seem easy, but you make it seem simple, which kind of inspires me to play. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. What I'm trying to do is play something that's like just sounds like music. Yeah. So if I'm playing an E chord and it goes to the B chord, the five. We've all heard that a million times. So it's just about these recurring chord changes or in relationships. Like just something this simple, you know. Like, you know, then that's not perfect.
Kind of like a crazy arms kind of thing.
Just those reoccurring shapes. It could be A minor to E7. You know, these little, you know.
That's a sound, right? I got to pick up my guitar.
Go to the one and wait.
Wait, take us home. Can you take us home with like a fill tuner or something?
How about this,
oh, I love this song. I love that song. That's on your first record?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Oh, my God. Guthrie Trapp, round two in the studio. What's been unsaid? We're out of time. Have we said it all?
We've said it all. We've done everything.
We've said it all.
We've covered it. Until next time. Hey, Zach, I got to tell you, man. Look, all joking aside, which we always joke a lot together, but which is part of the fun. I got to tell you, man, I'm very proud of you. I know that sounds crazy, but I am, and I'm really proud of you. You're kicking ass. The new magazine looks incredible. You're taking Nashville by storm. I met you when you first moved here. I'm proud to be your friend, and I'll do this podcast anytime you want. I love talking about this stuff, as you can tell. And so, man, just thank you.
Guthrie, thank you for coming on, man. Seriously, you were always the coolest before you had to be, and you still don't have to be. You still probably shouldn't be, to be honest. But you always were. You took me under your wing. It was always appreciated, honestly.
Oh, man.
And even to see what you've done, when I met you, it felt like you had it all going on, and now you've continued to just push the bar musically, career-wise, the stuff you get into, the clinics, the trio is sounding unbelievable. They were sounding incredible 5 years ago.
Thanks,
now you've
man.
Taken the band to this whole other level.
Thanks.
And I think you always get better every year. Every time I see you play, it feels like you're constantly pushing the bar, evolving your style, but staying very true to you.
Thanks.
I could say the same back at you, brother.
Thanks so much, man. Pleasure to be on here. Check out the new record. Check out the new bar, Barrel Proof, down by the baseball field.
Yeah, this is a new place that you're a partner in, right?
Yeah. It's called Barrel Proof. It's just a great little hang. It's right in between Von Elrod's and DeSano's Pizza that just opened up, two doors up from the main gate of the Nashville Sounds baseball field.
Where's the best pizza in Nashville?
Oh God, that's a tough one. You know what I like? Yeah. I like Roberta's.
Me too. Roberta's. Urban Cowboy. But that's
Urban
from Brooklyn.
Cowboy.
That's a Brooklyn place.
I love that
new
place.
I can't wait to go to this new bar though.
Well, let's go check it out. But hey man, thanks a million. I know you gotta run. It means a lot that you have me on, and I appreciate you, man.
Guthrie Trapp, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Stay safe out there.
Woo! Man, that was a lot.